Hey everyone, it's Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy here, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, The Rise of the Microbrands. All right, so first of all, today we have a returning guest, Mr. Kevin King, the King of Amazon, and we're going to be just talking about anything going on in Amazon. So before we do that, where are you, Kels?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
All right. Pretty good.
I'm almost getting this new setup. Almost.
Yeah, I was a little fine-tuning. It's a little fine-tuning
is right.
We'll get it sometime. Welcome everyone. Yep.
Be careful.
No comment.
Be careful.
All right, welcome everyone. We got a good turnout already. Wow, already up to 20 people. Welcome to the show, everyone. If you haven't already, please smash those like buttons and share with any friends. If you know anyone that is interested in some Amazon content and needs help with their listing, if you want to share it into a group, go ahead and do that. Also, our Beard Nation Facebook group is always available if you haven't joined yet. Lunch with Norm, Amazon FBA and e-commerce collective. I'll put the link in the comments. We also have a really great prize today that I just want to get out there right now. It's from Tony Sagar. He is giving away two European down feather duvets, and they retail at about $150 each. So he's giving out two of them. So this is only for US and Canadians only
due to shipping.
Yep, sorry everyone.
Any complaints about that, give to Kelsey directly, k@lunchwithnorm.com.
Thank you. And like and subscribe. We have our Clubhouse next week. We still have to make the link and everything, but that'll be up shortly. But welcome everyone. Welcome Simon. See, he knew.
All right, so how do people get into this contest for today?
All right, so I don't know. What are you thinking?
Well, you know what? It should be I Love Tony, but you know, because Kevin's on, let's just put. And I'm gonna say this because I know he's gonna just kind of roll his eyes. I love Kevin. Hashtag I love Kevin.
Okay, perfect. All right, there so hashtag go. I love Kevin.
Yeah, it's love, not want. Love.
Yeah, I love Kevin. Put in the comments section if you're from the U.S. or. If you're a Canadian, then we can send that prize to you. It's two feather duvets. But yeah, welcome everyone. Welcome Oleg, Fatiha, Ray, Andrew, Mark, Rad, Tony. And thank you, Tony, so much. We really appreciate it.
You know, Tony, you're awesome. And he's got a great product. And he doesn't, you know, just like Alan, he doesn't mind sharing the name and the brand of the product. So that's awesome.
So I'll put the link in the comment section. And yeah, please check out his website. And yeah, I think that's about it.
Okay, very good. Now, move. There. Good. He's off. Kevin.
What's up?
Hey, hold on. I got to say, sit back, relax, grab your coffee, and enjoy. But for us, it should be grab that cigar.
That's right. That's
one of these days, we'll have to sit on the balcony. I'll sit on mine, and we'll have a cigar together while we're doing this.
There we go. For sure.
Because the way things are going, we're never going to see each other.
Just like this. We'll just have lunch together once a month.
You know, I want to see hologram Kevin.
Hologram Kevin?
Yeah, so he can sit across from me and we, you know, a hologram.
Yeah.
We should do that. Yeah.
There's something that can create that. It's called the shape scale. Have you seen that?
The what?
It was a Kickstarter about 3 or 4 years ago. I'm getting ready to go on a... to lose some weight and stuff. So I'm buying all these little gadgets and everything. And one of them, it's called the shape scale. And you stand on this scale and it's got like an arm that rotates all the way around you. And it makes like a 3D image of your entire body. And so it makes that hologram. And then you can actually monitor all your, everything that you do. If you do certain exercises or do certain things, it'll actually show you, your gut went in this month and this much. It'll show you the whole progression of everything, how much fat's around your heart, how much everything. It's called the shape scale. It's not out yet. It's coming out this this in about 3 or 4 months. But yeah, if you Google shape scale, you'll see it. So it'll make a hologram. So that's what I'm saying is I can create a hologram for you.
I'm getting so big that I might have to put one on one foot, one on the other. And kind of... Hey, so in case anybody doesn't know who you are and what you do, can you just give us a little bit of information?
Sure. Yeah. My name's Kevin King. And I'm an Amazonaholic. I've been selling on Amazon since 2001, so what's that, 20 years now? I'm doing FBA since 2015. I run about 5 different Amazon businesses that focus on Amazon. We sell offline and off Amazon as well, but primarily most of the sales are coming through Amazon. I do a product sourcing company with called Product Savants with Steve Simonson. I have a calendar business that's partially on Amazon, but mostly off Amazon, where we do a lot of stuff in direct mail, still send out a catalog through the postal service. And then I do a bunch of training for Helium 10. So I created the Freedom Ticket course, which is a course they offer for free to anybody who has a Helium 10 membership. And then I lead their advanced training called Helium 10 Elite, which is a monthly, about 3.5-4 hour training. And then I run the $1 billion seller summit a couple times a year, which you spoke at the last one. We had to do it virtually because of the pandemic, but the last one was about 3 weeks ago, and you came on and delivered some awesome nuggets of advice and some cool strategies about some things of how to use Google that most people don't understand or don't know, which is really cool. So yeah, that's basically what I do.
Just a little thing. You're not too busy.
No, I don't have too much to do now.
No. All right. So I heard some really crazy things about Amazon that we're going to get into, or even Google. We could get into it later on in the show. But what about right now? What are your thoughts on, you know, we're going into April. What's going on? Anything that we should be aware of?
Well, Amazon seems like they're constantly making changes. You know, they just added the deal where you can actually add instruction manuals and stuff like that. Some people had that ability before, but they just really opened it up to pretty much any brand owner, which I think that'll help. It'll cut down on some of the returns and help. Sometimes before somebody wants to buy something, they want to know how hard is this thing to put together. And so I think that's going to help. You're seeing more on the advertising side. They're doing more stuff there. Some of the restrictions, it seems to be, are coming off of the 200. Mm-hmm. I've heard, I have not seen this exactly myself, but a couple people have told me that on a brand new product, they were actually allowed to ship in like 370 instead of 200 on a first time shipment. So I'm saying that may be in beta, that may be a test, I'm not sure, but they seem to be opening that up a little bit.
You know what I heard, Kevin?
What's that?
That with that 200 restriction, I don't know, I heard it through the grapevine, but I heard that they're thinking about removing it and putting it up to 1,000. Have you heard anything about that?
I've heard, I think Liron or somebody was saying something about that or posted something about that a while back. But I have not seen that myself. I'm mm-hmm. still on one of my accounts. It still has restrictions on it. But I think what they may be doing is maybe basing it on your past inventory management. I have a feeling that, this person that told me they could send in 370 instead of 200, they sell a lot of stuff. And so there may be some sort of algorithm that's like, okay, you've been pretty good at managing your inventory in the past, so we're going to let you send in 370 instead of 200. So I don't see them raising that to 1,000. Not anytime soon. Not until they get a lot more warehouse space online. I mean, once they get a lot more warehouse space online, maybe that'll go up. But I don't know. I think they're going to keep it, they might raise it from 200 up to 500 or something. But for a new product, I just don't see them opening the floodgates back up. They don't want to become a warehouse again.
Right.
And so, but if you have a history or you're an existing seller, I can see them making some dramatic differences where maybe they'll let you go to 1,000 or maybe even more if you have some sort of history.
Okay, let's go back to that instruction book. What are the restrictions on that? So, and I'll give you an example. Let's say that I have a beverage, but the beverage And I'm thinking of one in particular, non-alcoholic spirit. Okay. It has to be mixed with something. You can't drink it straight. It has to be mixed. The instruction manual is basically a recipe book. Could you put that up as a recipe book or as a manual?
I suppose you could do it. Does Amazon, is that the intended purpose? I don't think so. But could you do that? I don't think they're going to be checking this stuff. I think it's just going to go up. And maybe some algorithm looking through it and making sure. But I don't know. That's you know, I'm sure there's always people going to beat the system. So I think some people will abuse that and use it for other things.
Yeah, and I'm not looking at it so much as abuse. I'm looking at it because it really is. If let's say I take a look at most of the products in this category, people don't read the instructions, so they drink it direct instead of mixing it with, you know, a mocktail. And so all of the negative reviews are because people drank it straight. So if the instruction book was out there, then they would know how to do it properly.
Yeah, I would think that would be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically how to, I mean, it would be just like if there's a little pamphlet attached to the side of the bottle or something.
Yeah.
No, I think that would be okay. Yeah.
Now I got to think of other ways to do it and abuse it. No, but
that's instructions on how to mix the product, how to properly enjoy it. I think that would be totally okay and probably wise to do. And put that in your bullet points or somewhere. See the instruction booklet below.
Now, I'm kind of curious about your PPE product. We're not going to get into the brand and everything, but how are you finding that? Have you got it back up? Because I know you were having all sorts of problems with Amazon. You'd be answering it and providing game plans and doing everything according to the book, and they'd suspend you.
Yeah, we had a lot of problems last year. We knock on wood, we haven't had any. Well, we had one this year, but it just got classified as a pesticide. And then another one just randomly, a case quantity of it got classified as not allowed on Amazon. And, you know, because we went through all this rigmarole where we're down for sometimes a couple weeks last year on things, we have all the documents from Amazon. So when that happens now, I can just upload a screenshot of, like, from Amazon Legal and, like, from a couple other screenshots I have from inside Amazon, you know, with the name of the person and everything on there, and say, look, we're authorized, put it back up. But I put that screenshot. And, you know, originally that used to be I get one of those canned responses back saying, okay, thanks for the info. We're going to check with the concerned team or whatever. But now it's pretty much as soon as I upload that, within hours, it's back.
Really?
So that's definitely helped. But in all of that, we've lost because all the, you know, this is products that were doing $40,000, $50,000 a day last year, single products. And they're nowhere close to that now because all the history, all the momentum was lost. And you got a bunch of zeros in there on sales days, and just it's just a mess. So those are nowhere near that. Plus, the PPE market is completely saturated.
I
was just in a store yesterday, in a convenience store, getting some gas, and they had like hand sanitizer, little 2 ounce bottles of hand sanitizer clearance, four for a dollar, you know, 25 cents each. And I know. That's basically below the cost of what most people are manufacturing something like that for. I know the cost on a lot of the different things. And so how do you compete against that? You know, when you're going on Amazon, there's people selling 2 ounce bottles for $4.99 or pack of five for $10 or whatever. You know, it's a very, very, that market's way oversaturated and not in everything, masks, face shields, sanitizer. There's so much of it out there that you can't, it's hard to even give it away.
So you live in Austin. So it's the foodie area, right?
Yeah.
And I saw this the other day and I was just wondering if you'd be either getting into this market or if you've already bought one, the nose mask. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
So another PPE product. So while you're in a restaurant, you have a mask across your nose. It looks completely ridiculous. But anyways, I was just wondering if you might be using nose masks when you
go out. I get my second shot of Moderna on Sunday. So
oh, you get a nose mask.
So, but I still wear a mask. You know, this is what's going to be with us for a while. You know, I know there's a lot of different schools of thought out there. Depending on, no matter which side of the of this you're on, this is with us till 2023, 2024. It's with us forever. Actually, this is not going to go away in any time in the next 10 or 20 years. But the pandemic side will subside. But before things are back to somewhat fairly normal for everybody, it's going to probably be 2023 or later. And then, that's based on, more variants not showing up that mess up stuff. But people are tired of it, so that it's not going to be the same as what it was last year. You know, people are going to go about their business in some ways, but this is not going away. And like you guys in Canada are way behind us in the U.S. even on
way behind.
I mean, the U.S. is one of the top five or six or so in the world right now as far as percentage of people, and we still have a lot of issues. And you look at what's happening in Europe. So hopefully the PPE stuff, you know, people are still buying it. People still need it. Hopefully we can sell what we've made.
Yeah. You know, it's important, but when you start looking at it, like the nose mask, okay, I guarantee you they'll try to put it onto Amazon or whatever it is. PPE is a really, it's beyond competitive. I mean, you know, people think supplements are tough, but trying to stay on the PPE market for hand sanitizer or for masks or for anything. So anybody that's new out there that thinks that they can go to China or go to an American company and just get hand sanitizer and put it on Amazon, it's a pretty tough go.
Yeah, don't do it. Have you seen there's a helmet called the Microclimate that my wife bought one of those, and it's looks like a little space helmet, basically. It's actually pretty cool. It's black, it's sleek, and like not really bulky, but that's our doctor actually recommended it to us. We have a concierge doctor, and he actually said, "Hey, check out this thing. We're using it in some of the hospitals now called Microclimate, and it goes right over your head, and it's really cool. Check it out. You just Google it, we have a couple of those that come in handy. If you're
can you send me a picture?
I can send you a picture. Yeah.
Perfect. Wear, that's gonna be good. I'll wear my nose mask. You wear your climate.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go. All right. So, getting back to Amazon, anything on the horizon right now that you're excited about?
Anything on the horizon? I just think the opportunity is still good on Amazon. You know, I'm in the process of launching a new company. We started it actually last March, a year ago, and haven't launched a product yet. You know, we get all the funding, hundreds of thousands of dollars at the bank account, and funding, and it's just been sitting as we've been developing the product. And that's coming out. The first one's coming out in June, and I'm excited about that. I think the opportunity is great out there. Still in the space and e-commerce in general, some of the stuff that Amazon's doing, I think Amazon Live right now, it's still kind of a little niche play. But I think that's going to become more and more important over the next few years. And I think you're going to see Amazon becoming more of a pay to play platform. It already is, but even more so than it is now. And the organic stuff is going to become less and less, and everything else is going to be more positioning for positioning and more brand oriented type of stuff. Anything that Amazon's got cooking that I'm excited about, you know, they have the drone delivery and all that kind of stuff. You know, I don't see that as being anything significant anytime soon. Mm-hmm. It's more just a gadget, maybe in a New York City or some, you know, concentrated area. But I don't see that as being anything that's going to happen anytime soon. Is there something you had in mind?
No, I do know that April 6th, Amazon's going to be eliminating all information from the buyer. So I don't know if you've heard about that.
No, I didn't hear that. They're going to be all
information will be eliminated. I think they've come up with April 6th being that date.
I haven't seen that. Did they post that somewhere, or is that just
yeah? I was going to talk about it in the group, but yeah, I've got an email that states that.
Huh. Yeah, no, I have not seen that. So that's just for FBM or FBA or every. But they can't do it for FBM. They got to give it to you so you can fulfill an order.
I don't know what the heck they're going to do, but I can show you what I got. And I'm sure it said April the 5th or 6th. The other thing, which is kind of interesting, I don't know if you know about this. This has been out for a while. But Google announcing that they're getting rid of cookies. We had somebody on. Oh, I'm not sure if it's, I'm going to say the name and it's going to be the wrong guy. So anyways, it was just last week talking about Google. And they're doing away with cookies. Well, what does that mean? Affiliate marketers are going to be gone.
Well, are you sure that's Google, period? Or is that because of the stuff with
Apple?
Apple iOS that's really screwing around with pissing off Facebook and Google and all these marketers that are not going to be able to do a lot of things that they've been able to do.
Yeah, so it was really interesting. When he came on and he was talking about this, I had no idea it was going to get to that extent. So I can't give you detailed information about it, but Kelsey, who was it that said it?
Is that Tom McNamara?
Yes, it was Tom. Last podcast.
So they're completely getting rid of the Pixel?
They're getting rid of cookies. Yep.
Or cookies. Oh, cookies. Cookies. So a Pixel still exists.
A Pixel will still exist.
Yeah, but most cookies. Yeah, the cookies is more used. Yeah, okay. That cookies is an older technology, so that one I'm not so worried about. I mean, cookie that'll affect you on your browser. You know, maybe remembering your password, remembering some things like that on between sites or whatever. But I don't think that one's as big as if they
affiliate marketers. They're gonna feel it.
Yeah, affiliate marketers are gonna feel it some, but a lot of them are still using Pixels. But yeah, on serving up ads on some of these ad networks and stuff, they still use a lot of cookie-based stuff on what to show you. But yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. So one other thing, and I know you're really data-driven. I'm curious about 2021, when you're looking for a product opportunity, I know this can take a day to answer, but any quick insight on what you're looking for when you're picking a product?
I mean, like for Product Savants, for example, when I'm picking products for that, my process right now, and this is always evolving, and so is I use brand analytics. I start with brand analytics. And so for Product Savants, I'm looking for existing things. I'm not, you know, for that, we don't actually come up with brand new ideas. You know, we're not going to reinvent some new thing that's got to be patented and you got to develop from scratch. That's not the goal of that company. I think that's where more and more where Amazon is going. Just as an aside, I think in the future, you know, the next few years, the people that are able to not just go to Alibaba and find something and stick their label on it or find something and maybe modify it or bundle it in a different way, you're going to have to create something from new and have the IP. I think that's going to be the next big opportunity on Amazon. So someone who comes out with a course that says, here's, you know, A to Z on how to create brand new products and launch them on Amazon from scratch, from an idea. But it can't just be, the thing with Amazon is creating something that's brand new, you got to make sure the keyword demand is still there. Otherwise, you're going to spend a lot of money educating people and getting it out there. So, but there's still plenty of opportunities where you can see that there's a keyword people are searching for, I don't know, slow dog eating bowl or whatever. And there's a ton of products there, but versus going and just finding one that's already existing, or if I even finding one that maybe doesn't exist in design, but coming up with some sort of new thing. I don't know what it is, but it self cleans itself or something. I don't know. developing that from scratch and putting that out with some IP behind it, I think is going to be, where the big money is going to be made in the future, and you're going to have a little moat around you, and in licensing too. I think there's a big opportunity still on licensing on Amazon that hasn't been exploited. You know, if you had a slow feed dog bowl and you could go and get a license from the U.S. Army in the dog bowls and camouflage colors or something, and it says U.S. Army on the side of it. That creates some sort of little bit of a moat. So there's those kinds of things for product development. But back on the other one, brand analytics. So if I'm looking for something that already exists and it's a little bit easier, where people do want to do the traditional model, go to global sources or Alibaba or find something, modify a little bit and launch it, I take brand analytics. I download the last month's data. I like to do it in quarter, so if I can. It just depends if it's too far out. Like if Amazon only lets you go, so if it's the middle of March, usually the last quarter available is the fourth quarter of last year. So that's a 2.5 month gap of data. So I won't do that. I'll use the last month. I'll use February. But if I'm pulling the data January 5th or 10th or whatever, then I'll use the last quarter. So I'll download that data, which is what, 1 point something million, around 1 million plus. I think it's actually shows like 1.6 million. They let you download like 1 million of them. I'll download that in an Excel file. And then I'll run through that Excel file, and I personally delete everything that's below 500,000 SFR. Now, you don't have to do that. There's still plenty of opportunity down below 500,000. I'm just looking for things. I want things that sell $10,000 a month or more. And typically, the demand for that is something below 500,000 SFR on the keywords. And so I'll delete that. And then I'll go in and I'll actually add a column a fourth column on the spreadsheet, and I'll take the conversion share. So the three columns, ASIN 1, ASIN 2, ASIN 3, the conversion shares, and I'll sum those up in that column. And my personal cutoff is 40%. So anything that's where the first three ASINs have more than 40% of the buy share, or the conversion share, that tells me that market, that only 60% is left for everybody else. And to me, I want more than 60% left. That tells me it's the top three guys basically have half the market. And some right. The other half of the market is still big enough. And if you get a piece of that, you're still going to be happy. But I'm just saying, this is how I eliminate it down to find the better opportunities. You could change these parameters however you want. And so then that eliminates those 500,000 down to, 100,000, 200,000, something like that. And then I go through, and anything that has a high click share, but a zero or less than 1% conversion share, all those keywords get eliminated as well, because that tells me there's manipulation going on. Anything where you see those zeros and conversion share, there's some sort of funny business going on, where people are doing add to carts, or there's something going on, because why would you have a 20% click share and 0% conversion share? Mm-hmm. It's not always funny business. There could be legitimate reasons for that, but those are ones I eliminate too. Then you're left with, 50,000 keywords or something. And then I start going through them with my eyes and just scrolling down and looking for, obviously I've been doing this long enough, so I know to skip over garlic presses and obvious stuff that just looks competitive, or I already know it's competitive. And then I'll stumble across something that, I'll take out also seasonal stuff. So the word Christmas, I'll filter out Christmas or Easter or Halloween, all those seasonal things out, because I'm looking for year-round stuff. And then I'll go through and just look at them one by one and punch them into Google. Not Google, into Amazon, and run the Helium 10 X-ray tool on it and see what the market's doing, see how the competitors are, see how much depth there is in that keyword, see look at the reviews. And, I have some criteria I look for there. And then if that passes muster, that keyword passes muster, then I'll take that keyword, and then I'll go back to the full brand analytics with past 500,000 and see how many other related keywords are there around this. And then I'll see if I can find two or three other keywords that have similar metrics to this first one of, the conversion share is 40% or less for the top three. And if there is, then that's a good opportunity product. And then I'll take that and, for product savants, and I give that to Steve's team. They go and they source it, and they come back to us with all the sourcing and the tariffs and the duties and everything. And about probably a half or two thirds of the products get eliminated at that point, because just the math doesn't work. And what's left are good product opportunities.
Wow. So, Kelsey.
Yes.
You're going to have to listen to this and go through these action steps. And we'll post it.
All right.
But, you know, and that's why it's so successful, you know, because you do take the time to go through and do all of this work. There's lots of ways of doing it out there, you know, but this is a different way. I don't think a lot of people are talking about the style that you're just doing, the strategy that you're doing. And, you know, it's interesting because you're talking about product innovation. Excuse me. And I talk about you a lot, but I don't want that to go to your head. But the way that you have already done product innovation years ago, when you took the bully sticks, a typical bully stick, and the way that you created that bully stick and you did you created a different market for it and a different price point. And then when you took that charger, you know, the holder, and you completely innovated this new product, and it killed it. And these steps, like Alpha Lobby was on the other day, and we were talking about product innovation and the importance of it. And I used you as an example. You know, you did it years ago, way before I knew you. And you know what you did back then is current today. If you can do that and you can do it well, you can dominate on Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, there's still risk.
There is,
but yeah, I think that's the future. Of people that, I mean, that's the future of the big companies. You have Thrasios and all those guys right now buying up, you know, there's 40, 50, 60 of these aggregators that are buying up these Amazon businesses that have done it the old way. But there's going to reach a point where there's going to be less and less of those. Yep. And they're going to be looking for these others that have more of a moat around them and more of a, and that's the people that are doing the innovative products. And you know, Amazon has the launchpad for this. They have a program mm-hmm. where they get Kickstarter and Indiegogo stuff and help them kind of get going. But you know, when you put something on Kickstarter, Indiegogo, you're telling the world what you're doing, and you're giving them a head start because you haven't even got the thing made yet. And so you're telling them, and you know, a lot of times these guys are showing the whole process of making it, and pictures and everything. So it's super easy to copy. Anything that's on Indiegogo or Kickstarter, not super easy is not the right word, but if you have the money and the capacity, it's super easy to copy anything there. And so by the time a Kickstarter thing gets launched, and most of these people doing Kickstarters that are innovating stuff are not good at forecasting how long it's going to take them to do this, and they end up having delays or even never coming out with the product. And then other people are using Kickstarter. I mean, big companies are using it just as a marketing tool too, that already have everything behind them. But, so you gotta be careful. So of putting something out there like that, that can just be imitated. And by the time you get to market, someone with more money and a bigger pocket or bigger pocketbook and more capacity can squash you.
So this leads to another question, about costs. The average or the white label seller going out and just finding a plastic shoe stretcher and throwing their name on it and then coming up with product development. How much cash flow do you need for the plastic shoe stretcher, whatever it is? And I know it would be a huge range, but you know, on average, and then on the product innovation side, what kind of cash should you have put aside for it? And again, that's a huge range as well.
Well, it's more probably time than it is cash. I mean, it depends on the product. To create a mold, like I did slow feed dog bowls, those molds were $3,000 each. So that's my additional cost on that versus just going to a factory and saying, give me the one off the shelf and stick my logo on it. It was $3,000. Mm-hmm. But I also had to design it. So I had to actually go through the, you know, I can't draw worth a damn, but I had to sketch it or find something. And I went on Upwork, found a guy, and he happened to be in Argentina, that could do the CAD stuff for me. And I said, hey, I want a bowl that looks in the shape of a bone and has this, and it's this high, and give him, you know, the basic specs. And he created a CAD drawing of it, sent it to me in 3D, where in a little program where you could spin it around and you can kind of get a pretty good idea of what it's going to look like. Made some changes, a few changes to it. And then I had to do a 3D printing, which is not expensive either, but because I wanted to test it, and I had some different dogs stick their nose in between the little grooves to make sure a flat bulldog face could get in there with his tongue versus a dog with a long spout or long nose could get in there, and then had to make some additional changes. You know, that whole, that wasn't expensive. You know, it's $400 for this designer, I think, to do all his work. And probably at the time I said and done, $150, $200 in 3D printing. So that's not super expensive. And then $3,000 for a mold. So, you know, it's $4,000 or so, roughly there. But that took a few months, you know, to do that process. And then have the molds made, took a little bit longer. And then the manufacturing, and then the first time you manufacture something, there's problems. Because we had silicone and plastic on top of each other. I made it look really pretty, and it actually wouldn't slide on the floor and a bunch of stuff. And there were some issues with bubbling in the mat, so we had to work that stuff out. So the whole thing to come to market probably took about seven, eight months from concept to actually being for sale. And so that's longer than if you just found something on Alibaba and stuck your name on it or made a slight modification. So it's more time than it is money. So the $4,000 was not that much. I mean, maybe that's a lot for, you know, someone on a $10,000 budget, that's a lot of money. But for where I was doing it, wasn't. And then we sold those, and, you know, Chewy.com took them, Amazon sold them on Amazon. I'm not making them right now because the factory that I was using ended up having an issue. And then I couldn't get the molds back out. They wouldn't release the molds. And so I just got so busy. I was like, just screw it for right now. But these were making me, yeah, these are 24-9 molds for $25 versus most of them on Amazon are $6, $7. But this was a nice, good-looking mold that sits on your floor. My dog still, they just ate out of them this morning. I have two here, and they just ate their food out of them this morning. I still use them, and I'm probably going to bring them back. We're looking at bringing them back. I got away from it. But they were making, you know, $5,000-$6,000 a month profit on two different sizes, small and a large. Not earth-shattering, but good. And they sold well. And I still get people today still emailing, hey, I saw this in my neighbor's house. You know, how can I get some?
Oh, cool. Very cool. So I think we've probably got a ton of questions, Kels.
Oh, yeah.
I thought so.
So whenever you guys want to jump into them,
we got tons. So first, today's giveaway is from Tony Cigar. And he's giving away two feather down comforters or duvets, right, Kels?
Two duvets. This is only for U.S. and Canada only. So if you entered before and you didn't realize that, just let me know, and then I'll take your name off.
But, and by the way, when you receive Tony's duvets, you'll see what branding's all about. This guy does it right. I know his product. I've seen how he's packaging it. I've seen the brand. He does it up right. He spent the time, the money, put the energy in, and it's got a great product. So whoever gets this, you're going to love it.
Yep. So hashtag I love Tony or hashtag I love Kevin, and that'll get you in. Do you want to? All right. So do you want to do the first question?
Yep. Let's do it.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. From Rad. That's a book.
Okay. We were selling a product on retail arbitrage. We ran out of the product for a month. The listing was inactive. We got the product and we listed it again. Our sales are not good. We found out that the reviews are for a different product, but the category is the same. How can we relist this product?
So usually on arbitrage, someone else is selling the product. So is this something you're buying? I mean, I guess retail arbitrage is usually there's already a demand for the product on Amazon. There's already a listing, and you're jumping on it and being one of the sellers. But if you're maybe, you know, I know when I first started doing FBA, one of the things I did is I tested barbecue sauce. Here in Austin, there's a company called the Salt Lick Barbecue. That's, you know, it's not one of the better
which I've tested, and it's very good.
it's very good, but by Austin standards, it's the lower half of the top 10. There's much better barbecue in Austin, but it's the famous one. It's one of the originals, and it's very good. I mean, anywhere, any other city in the world, it would be number one, but Austin is known for its barbecue, so it's not number one, but people know it, and they have a barbecue sauce, and that sauce, I would go out and get that. I would buy that, went down to their facility, their big restaurant. They have a little gift shop. And I said, yeah, how much for a case of this stuff? And, you know, they sold me a case of it, and I threw it up on Amazon as a seller. Basically, you know, without their permission or anything, I don't buy in wholesale. I just bought a case of it. It was at a discount, and then put it up on Amazon and sold it. I need to get ungated in grocery. And so I used that to get ungated in grocery and ended up selling it, but I didn't, it was just a test. So, but that, I didn't consider that really arbitrage. I consider that, it's not really private label. It's just basically selling. Back on his question. So you're down for a month and you want to get back up. What was it? Can you bring the question back up there, Kelsey, again?
Yep. Just give me a second. So how can we relist this product?
For a different product.
I'm not understanding.
If you listed it again, did you list it from scratch? Then there should be no reviews on it. But if you just threw it up on another product, the reviews for a different product. So it sounds like you're jumping on somebody else's listing is what that sounds like. And it sounds like someone may be using that listing for different things. And you want to relist the product, you would probably have to relist it as a standalone product. You probably have to just create a new ASIN. Now the problem there is you have a UPC code on that product probably, and that UPC code may not match. So you would have to try to get a GTN exemption, or you have to game the system and use a different UPC code that you have for your company. You need to get the one from GS1. I mean, Amazon doesn't like you doing this, get one from GS1 and you have to use that. I'd use probably the GTIN exemption, and you'd have to put an FN SKU label on that and send that in.
How do they go about getting a GTIN exemption?
You have to request it. That's not always easy to do, especially on an existing product. But what I would do in this case, when I request it, I'd say, we're trying to sell this product. But the one that's on Amazon is not, that's associated with this UPC, is actually for a different product. The reviews are all for something else. And Amazon may fix that problem, or they may grant you the exemption.
Got it. All right, Kels, next.
Okay, next one. Hey, King, when you start your day, what does the first hour of work look like? A regiment for daily Amazon King seller.
Well, I'm a late riser, so Norm does these calls. It's 11 a.m. for me, 12 noon on the East Coast, but I'm an hour behind over in Austin. I usually don't roll out of bed till about 10:30 or 11, so I actually have to set an alarm. I don't wake up to an alarm, number one, except unless I have to come on lunch with Norm, and then I wake up to an alarm. And comb my hair. And,
yeah, me too.
But yeah, the first hour is when I get up. It's usually I feed my dogs, hit the head, take a shower, and get something to eat, and then I go through my email and messages that have come in over the night. But I'm up until about 3 o'clock every night, 2 or 3 o'clock every night. Some of that's just chilling because I like that hour. There's no phones ringing, no emails coming in, nothing bothered me. I'm one of these that I hate my inbox to have unread messages. You know, you'll see some people have their phone and it's got all these little dots that, you know, they get all these things that drives me crazy. Even if I've read the message, it has to get I guess it's the ADD in me or something. It has to be filed or has to be dealt with. So I stay on top of all my social media. I don't participate in LinkedIn for that reason. I think there was a profile on me on LinkedIn. People used to be, hey, I contact you, never got back to me. It's like, I don't use LinkedIn. So if you ever go to LinkedIn, you see me, it's not me. And I won't answer. So I fine tune what I use, 4 or 5 different ones. And, you know, sometimes it might take me a few hours to get back to somebody, but I go through everything within 24 hours and either file it to be answered or answer it. And they get moved often to the little organized places. So that's the first thing I do in the morning. And then I check all my bank accounts. I log into every single, like 15 different bank accounts. I actually log into every single bank account just to make sure there's no funny business going on. You know, make sure there's not a massive chargeback that came on one of them or something, or make sure, you know, Amazon deposits actually hit when they're supposed to. So if I need to yell at Amazon. And then filter out the emails, and then then whatever the tasks are. But most of my creative stuff is done in the evenings. So creative work, busy work is done during the day, during normal daytime hours, and the creative stuff is done at night.
Very good.
Okay. All right. From Darwin, is it possible to move one listing to another Amazon account? I have a listing that works better with another brand under another account and a company altogether.
Yeah, you can do that with Amazon's permission. You just got to make sure you can't sell the same thing on two different accounts. So you would have to get their permission and probably write a letter and say, hey, I'd like to move this ASIN to this other account. You may have to show that that company bought it, but as long as it's a totally different company with totally different bank accounts, totally different EIN, all that stuff, you should be able to do that. But you are going to have to, whichever one you remove it from, you're going to have to eliminate selling it there. But yeah, it's similar to someone buying your business. That's basically what they do. If they bought, if one of these aggregators bought your company, or bought your ASINs, that's what they would do. So yeah, it's definitely possible.
Okay. From Simon, if you're going to launch a new winter product in preparation to rank well for Q4 spike, when would the ideal time to activate the listing be?
Probably July or August, and start getting sales. Now the sales are not going to be much, but start the ranking process. Like I have, for example, I have a winter product. I have calendars. That's basically a winter product because people buy those at the end of the year for the next year. The bulk buying time of that is between Thanksgiving in the U.S. and mid-January. So about a two-month period. Basically, mid-November to mid-January is when 90% of the sales occur. But I start selling those. Like this last year, we started selling them in July. I put them on Amazon and activated the listing in July. And that's for a couple reasons. One is we can only send them 200. So we start getting that algorithm going. And then we start ranking them. Now, in July, people buying it, July 2020, people buying a 2021 calendar was not very many. Is maybe one or two a day. But I wasn't worried about that because I rode the wave. So I got ranked on keywords, and as the demand goes up, you ride that wave. It's like catching a wave out at sea and just riding it all the way to the shore, where it gets bigger and bigger and bigger as it cooks. And that's what you want to do.
And no. Knowing that you said July, and if you're having the product manufactured in China, you've really got to look around May to get your ducks in a row.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah. Our calendars, for example, our season like this, we make them in South Korea. And so they go off, the actual files go off in April to the printer in South Korea. And they typically, come back by the end of April. In May, we're looking at proofs, and June, early June, they're shipping, they're printing and shipping to us. And then they arrive mid-July timeframe. But yeah, you have to back that up. And it's kind of weird to be in March or something thinking about 2022 already, but it's what you got to do. And if you go to the if you look at some of the big companies like Calendar Club, for example, that has all these kiosks in the malls, and they have calendars.com, they actually ask for 2022 calendars. They ask for all the details January 3rd of 2021. So they actually send you a spreadsheet that you have to fill out all this information on by January 3rd of the preceding year. So they could start forecasting and issuing POs and everything. It's a different way of thinking. It's just like Halloween, Halloween stuff for this coming season was actually, the shows were last fall. I mean, you have to be constantly thinking in the future. So that's what on that, those winter clothing, it would be July or August launching that.
Okay.
Thank you for your questions. I also just want to say, if you haven't yet, if you can just please hit that like button or share this out to your friends, we'd really appreciate it as well. Okay, next question. This is from Steven. Hey, Kevin, not sure if you know the answer to my question, but how do you successfully get ungated from baby furniture? Is it hard to get approval?
I've never done baby furniture, so I don't have a clue on how easy or hard it is on baby furniture, unfortunately. I don't know. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, I can't help you on that one either.
All right, from Daniel. Kevin, how many percentages more does your landing cost? Do you sell your products on Amazon FBA? What is the cut line to launch or not?
So a product that retails for less than $100, so the suggested price is under $100, I want a minimum 3x markup, ideally 4 or 5 or higher. The higher, the better. I mean, like my calendars that I was talking about just a second ago, the landed cost on those is $1.52 and we sell them for $20. Amazon's fees are about $5.50. And so you can see that on a $20 product, there's about $12 margin on every single one of them. It's pure profit because we don't do any PPC or anything else on it. I mean, there's a little bit of, call it 50 cents to ship them in FBA. So there's a little bit of extra cost there, but it's not much. So that a minimum 3x off the landed cost. And that's what a lot of people forget is they get a price out of China, for example, and the price is $5. And I could pay, I'm gonna sell this for 15. Kevin said 3x it, so 15. That's not good enough because that $5 actually is probably more like $9 because the $5 is most likely gonna have a 25% Trump tariff on it. So you gotta add $1.25 right there. This may have another duty on it. Then you got your freight in, and if it's going to a 3PL, you have your freight from China to the 3PL and all the fees associated with that. And then you get it from the 3PL into Amazon. And so by the time you're said and done, it's probably $8 or $9 by the time you your total landed cost. So that product needs to be selling for bare minimum $24.97, probably more like $26 or $29.97 to actually have a chance. And the more competitive categories where you guys spend more on advertising, you probably need more like a 4 or 5x to make sure you're doing, you have enough margin there. That's a big problem I see in the Freedom Ticket. People that, you know, back a couple of years ago, I would do calls and there was an option where you could actually pay to speak with me. I don't do that anymore. I'm too busy, but people would pay an upgraded option and speak with me. And I'd get on the phone a lot of these times with these guys and gals, and they'd be like, I just don't know why I'm not making any money. It's like, well, what are you selling your product for? $11.97. What's your landed cost? What's your factory cost? $4. What's your landed cost? Well, I'm not sure. Well, let's just call it $6. And you're selling it for $11.97. Yeah, but everybody else, I can't sell anything. If I put it at $12.97, they don't sell. I got to sell $11.97. Otherwise, I'm not selling or I'll lose my BSR. And like, well, $11.97 after Amazon fees, you're not making any money. You can't really have any room for advertising. There's no margin there. So you're just donating to Amazon. And that's a common problem. People just don't know their numbers and don't know the math. And you got to know that. You have to. And you have to have room to work. And that's why, you know, I said earlier, you know, half to two-thirds of the products that I find, we eliminate after doing the sourcing on it because there's not enough margin. The money, a lot of times on Amazon, is made in the sourcing, not in the selling. And so being able to source and engineer a product at a really good product at a good price and get it at that price gives you more room to work on the other side when competition comes in.
I can give you a good example of this. I made this mistake. So I took a look when I was getting onto Amazon in the earlier days, and I thought I had a great product, about $1, with packaging and everything. It was about $1.10 to $1.40. So I thought, wow, I can sell this, you know, $10.99, no problem. I didn't think about, because it was such a low dollar value, Amazon's going to hit me with $4.65 right off the top. That was my first mistake, not knowing those numbers. And all of a sudden, I was trying to get them out there at $7.99 to $9.99. Then it turned into an add-on product. So the add-on product, you had to have $24. So I made a major mistake when I first got into Amazon by not understanding the process. So, and the extra FBA costs, and like you just said, knowing the numbers, but all of the numbers.
Mm-hmm. And it's too many people don't know it. It's sad. And that's why probably 95% of the people that try to sell on Amazon, they fail. Most don't work, don't mm-hmm. succeed. I mean, what's there? I think Leron posted this yesterday in one of the Facebook groups, a link to an article at Marketplace Pulse about saying there's, what, 6 million accounts or something worldwide on Amazon, seller accounts. Something like, I'm getting these numbers wrong, but it was a fraction of that actually had its single seller feedback in the last year that indicating that it actually made a sale. And then a fraction of that are the ones that are hitting $1 million in sales or more. So most people selling on Amazon, it's either a part-time hustle or a side gig that they're making some money on, or they're not. The vast majority don't succeed. The Amazon makes money and they don't. But that doesn't mean this is a bad opportunity or you got to go look for something else. The opportunity is still there. There's a lot of bad information out there, and a lot of bad advice, and a lot of people that may not have business experience or entrepreneurial experience and aren't thinking through everything properly. They're watching a webinar somewhere where they show you, I bought this for $5 and sell it for $20. I made a $15 profit on every one. They leave out a bunch of the costs, to make it look really good. And so people get excited and don't do the math, or don't come into it with enough money. You know, they come in with, and they wipe out their initial investment and don't have the money to sustain it. Maybe they're successful, but they screw up and run out of stock and are basically in constant start over mode.
Did I ever tell you the story about, how I got into one of your products? You know the product. And the way that I came about, it was a home run. When we got into the marketplace, it was a home run. We were making a ton. It just went, we ordered it 3 times. And each time it was doubling, tripling. The guy ran out of money. Uh-huh. He couldn't afford, even though it was successful, he couldn't afford it, so I bought it. But he ended up, just selling it off, selling the inventory. And it was so unfortunate because, it was a great product. And he was being, it was a successful product.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you got to have your money. You got to have that cash.
You got to have a source of it. You have to be able to get it. And sometimes it's hard. You're successful that quick. Seller's funding or Alta or some of those will help you, but you have to have a history, or you have to go to someone like a CrewMe, or you have to have a rich uncle, or you got to be willing to put some of your own money on the line. And I would never recommend anybody put their house or anything that's going to affect their way of living on the line to do this. Always only use money you can afford to lose. And that's not going to change your family or your lifestyle or anything. And always be careful of borrowing money from friends. A lot of times it's which one, you can't have them both. You can't have money and the friend. You can either have the money or the friend, but not both a lot of times. So be careful with that as well.
So that means I can't go to Uncle Kevin for my next project?
No, probably not.
All right, Kels.
We are at the top of the hour at 1 o'clock. So anytime you need to go, Kevin, just let us know. But
oh, there he goes again. How much time you got, Kev? You got another 15?
Yeah, I can do 15.
Okay. Yeah, we got a bunch of questions.
I just got to jump on a clubhouse, Rana's clubhouse.
Yeah.
It's just getting going right now, so it's fine.
Okay.
All right. Okay. From Simon, we see a bunch of aggregators and brokers now. However, there are a zillion exit-focused sellers. Do you think there's ever going to be a point of saturation of exiters?
I personally don't know. I mean, I asked this question of Thrasio, and they seem to think there's not. I asked this of the board when they were having a clubhouse call about a month ago or so, and they said no. They think there's going to be there's not going to be a saturation of people exiting, and there's enough people buying right now that can cover that. But I think there will be at some point. But I think it's actually the reverse of that. I think there's not going to be enough companies to buy that make sense to buy or are willing to sell. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think this is the golden period this year and probably into next year. And there's going to be a shakeout. Some of these aggregators are going to fold or consolidate because a lot of them don't know what the hell they're doing. They're getting into it and don't realize how hard this actually is. And so they're going to fail. And so if you're looking to exit, I would highly recommend you check out whoever it is that's buying you. And especially if you have some sort of profit sharing on the backside where you're not getting all your money up front, be careful. And whatever deal you do, assume you're never going to see any of that money. And just consider that as a bonus. And if you're happy with a deal without ever seeing any of that money, then it's probably a good deal. But I think a lot of people are going to get screwed. And so now, is a Thrasio going to screw you? Probably not. I mean, they're pretty well funded. They've got a big team, but you just never know. But I think they're less likely than some of these other startups that are, you know, bought their first three or four businesses. Those I would be a little, you know, I would be doing your due diligence on who's running these things. And the problem is with a lot of these companies is, you know, I saw this with 101 Commerce. They were one of the first ones to do this like 3 years ago. And Richard, who started that, he came to me, he talked to Norm, he talked to a bunch of people out there. You know, he did his homework up front, and he was trying to hire us. You know, he's like, Kevin, you know, I'll buy your company and you come work for me and you get paid twice. And I'm like, I don't want to work for you. You know, you're a nice guy, but I'm doing this because of the freedom. I don't want to go work a corporate job and work for somebody else. Even if you're going to pay me nicely, I can do better on my own. And so a lot of these guys are finding that to be a problem. You know, Thrasio has been able to hire a couple of the sellers that they bought their business, and that's helped them immensely. A couple of good people that actually have a clue, but a lot of this Amazon selling is guerrilla marketing, and it's being able to fly by the seat of your pants and move quickly. And these big companies can't do that. And you get this infrastructures and bureaucracies and layers of management stuff that makes it difficult to do. And it can crush businesses. And hiring good people that know what they're doing is hard. And there's only so many of those to go around. And so that's the challenge that a lot of these guys have. And so it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, if you're in a position to sell right now, I would seriously be looking at doing it. Because I think now could be better. Just because there's so many of them out there, you're going to get most likely more offers than you would get a couple years from now.
Right.
But one of the reasons to not sell right now to an aggregator is if you're truly building a brand. If you're truly building a true brand, you might not want to sell to an Amazon-only aggregator. You might want to hold off if a Procter & Gamble or one of these big, you know, Unilever or one of these big, you know, type of companies like that might be interested in your business at some point, because you're truly a brand, not just an Amazon play. You might not want to sell. Maybe you want to go through the motions to see what you're worth right now, and then that'll give you an idea and get some of your ducks in a row. But you might not want to sell until, because those guys can pay more than any of these aggregators will, and they'll give you a better multiple, and it'll be a better strategic play long term, most likely. So it depends.
Very good.
Okay, next is from Matthew. Adding variations versus new listings. It's a different length on a home improvement product. Existing sellers is 50-50. Top two have variations. Part two, how do I add a variation to an existing listing which was not set up as a parent?
Yeah, you can add that by using a flat file. So you can go in and use a flat file and do what's called a partial update. You could probably Google this. There's probably people that have screenshots that will walk you through it. Or go look on the seller forums on Amazon. I'm sure there's someone's linked to an SOP or something on how to do it, but it's, you're gonna have to use a flat file, which is like a Excel file that you download. So as far as doing it or not doing it, that's something you just gotta test. A size difference, I would probably make it as a variation. But some people, there's the argument that you have, if you can get them both ranked on page one, you know, that's more real estate you're taking up. That's having Starbucks on two corners of a four corner street instead of just one corner. But sometimes one corner is good enough. And you can focus your energy on keeping one of them ranked so that the other one follows it. Otherwise, you're going to have keep both of them ranked to keep them both there. So it's a testing thing.
I got a question. How are you setting up your titles right now?
How am I setting up my titles?
Yeah. Everybody's doing things differently. I'm just curious on how you're setting up your title. Short, long, keyword up front, keyword in the back.
I put the main key. I don't follow the Amazon guidelines to put your brand first, unless they force me to.
Right.
So I don't do that. I put the main keywords up front. When I first launch a new product, I try to make the title fairly long. You know, try to get up to about 200 characters or so. And then over time, I will cut that back. Within that first month, I'll usually cut that maybe in half, and cut that down to just after I see what's working and what's not working. Because I think a shorter title, probably long term, is better. If you look at a lot of the top sellers, a lot of them have shorter titles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take away the fact that someone's doing a launch or whatever. You know, you can see that when you're looking at some of the trends and the graphs, you can kind of figure out this person must be doing launch. Take away those, but the consistent long selling people often have shorter titles. And so that's what I do. I start long main keywords in the front. I try to get as many keywords in there as I can that I think might be relevant for my ranking, and then I pare it down over time.
Do you use single keywords or phrases? Do you duplicate?
I do duplicate if necessary. I try to avoid that. Try to put things back to back or butt them up to each other so you can have nesting and stuff. I try to do that, but I try to get my top three phrases in phrase order.
All right, very good.
From Fatiha, Amazon sells competing products to me, which they buy wholesale, but they're a basic listing with a very simple, cheap product. Do you think we have a disadvantage going against Amazon, or does it really not matter?
No, I mean, if you're creating a new listing and Amazon's has their own listing, and you're creating a new, if you're on their same listing, then you have a disadvantage. But if you're separate listings, no, you can usually beat Amazon. I mean, they might have a pricing advantage because they might be willing to go lower than you, but a lot of times you can beat them. The one place where I don't like to compete is if, when I'm looking at a keyword, if most of the page one is all Amazon, bought and sold by Amazon, bought and shipped by Amazon, or sold, sorry, I can't speak, sold and shipped by Amazon, that one might be a little competitive. But to have Amazon as a seller doesn't worry me too much because they don't know what they're doing. Honestly, they don't. I mean, the only thing they have a price advantage, or they don't care sometimes. That would be the biggest one. But I can usually outmarket them.
Okay, great. From Jack, do you follow other FBA sellers besides Norm?
Why? There's no need to. I mean, Norm's the bearded one. He's got the wisdom. He's got everything, you know. He's from the great white north. So, you know, he's mythical. So why do I need to follow anybody else?
I'll give you a follow, too. I already did.
You got me everything I know.
All right. I'm not sure who this is from, actually. But my question is, if I'm going to run out of stock, should it be with high velocity and then close until I get stock in? I am a newbie. Would appreciate your thoughts. Should I turn off PPC to reduce sales?
No, do not turn off PPC to reduce sales. Go out with as high velocity as you can. I'll give you a point on this. Velocity matters and sales matter. I have one of my, I keep going back to these calendar examples because it's fresh in my mind, but I have a calendar that was selling this last year, and in December, it's in the office products category. Its BSR was it got up to a BSR of about 500 in the office supply category, which it was selling a lot of units a day. I ran out of stock of this product, forget exactly when, but somewhere right around Christmas time, probably right before Christmas. Completely ran out of stock, had no more in my warehouse, completely out of stock. I have five calendars, so the other four were still there. I left that listing live because people were still finding it, and it had down at the bottom, frequently bought together. Customers who bought this also bought, and a lot of those are my other four calendars. So people were coming in using that as a gateway to find my other ones. Oh, this one's out, let me go get Kevin's other calendar. But the point of this is going out with velocity. That calendar has not been in stock since before Christmas. So 3 months ago, 3 months has been out of stock. I was just in my account the other day checking, you know, wiping out some of the last little cash from last season and just checking on making sure the account's in good shape. That calendar, despite not being in stock for 3 months, still had a BSR in office products of like 88,000. Still, had not been in stock, and it sold from July of last year, you know, one or two units a day, and then started selling a lot in November and December. But to still have an 88,000 BSR 3 months after completely being out of stock says something about velocity, mm-hmm. and that velocity freaking matters, and that your past sales history, your older sales history, is very important in the algorithm. Now, if I'd gone back in stock on that, if I suddenly magically March 15th got some more in stock and put it back up, that BSR probably would have gone from 88,000 to 60,000 to 50,000 to whatever it could have, it would have gone back. It probably would never have gotten back to 500, but it would have gone back to something reasonable much, much faster, because it's, they're still using that past sales history. And there's like, this thing sold really well in the past, so let's give it another shot again. And let's move it up. So always, always go out with velocity, always. Never reduce your price to slow raise your price to slow sales. Never cut off your PPC. Go out with velocity.
Yeah, I hear that all the time. Oh, raise your sales. And I'm going, oh, what are they doing?
Yeah, don't do it.
And let's do from Barb. Do you sell on other platforms like Walmart?
So I have Shopify stores. I have some on some other platforms. I do some eBay. I have done Walmart in the past. I'm not currently doing Walmart right now, but we will be with one of this new brand that's coming out, the first product in June. We will be doing some Walmart and some actual national retail, other national retailers. But the first product actually has a licensing component to it. So we actually have a licensing deal with a pretty big, well-known brand. And we're doing their stuff in the pet space. So and they have a distribution already in sporting goods stores and pet stores and Macy's and Nordstrom's and stuff. So we'll be tagging along into some of that. Plus they have influencers, some of their athletes and stuff have like 2-3 million followings on Instagram. So they'll be pushing the product there, when it first comes out, and using it with their pets and stuff, and showing it in place, saying, "Hey, you can go get it at Amazon." So I think it's gonna be interesting. So my first time doing a pure licensing deal. You know, we had to do guarantees on, you know, they get 7% of the gross. So as a licensing, and you have to pay upfront fees. We had to pay the first year $10,000 guarantee upfront. The second year is like a $50,000 guarantee. And then it goes up, but they gave us a runway to ramp up, because we said, you know, first year is going to be like two products. But what we're doing on this is a little bit different. They're like, oh, why don't you do a leash? And I'm like, no, what we're doing, because we don't know if your brand, how well, we don't know yet if your brand's going to make that big of a difference on Amazon. We want to see. So we're finding products that we know will sell on Amazon, no matter whose brand's on it. So it could be Kevin's unknown brand. And do I think that can sell well? But yes, I do. But now let's take their name and stick it on it and help and see what a difference it makes. And it's a kind of a test. And that way we know that at least the first couple products, if this doesn't work, at least we know we can sell the thing no matter what name is on it. And then later on, once we build an audience around this, and then we can maybe, you know, okay, now we'll do a leash, even though leashes are super competitive and I would never do that otherwise. But now maybe we have enough people that are following this. We'll do a leash.
Okay. Let's do one more question.
Okay. Do you want to segue into this one? This is a good one to leave off. Which clubhouse room are you going to go into?
Yeah, it's more on what's the actual name of it? It's this guy from Canada that Norm knows well. He does a room called it's every other Friday. It's called the Amazon Mastermind. It's in the Amazon FBA Club, but Amazon Mastermind Advanced Strategies and Techniques. And what he does, you know, a lot of clubhouse rooms are Q&As where people bring up different, they have a group of people on the stage, and then they let people from the audience come up, kind of like what Kelsey's doing here, and ask questions. But this particular one he does every other Friday is a mastermind. So you can be in the audience, you can't ask questions. You just sit back and listen. And he brings up, like I'm looking right now at the list of people that are in the room. There's some pretty good people on stage, and he has some topics and he throws them out there, and you're like a fly on the wall listening to all these really smart people talk about different things regarding Amazon and e-commerce. So I'd recommend it. It's Amazon. If you go to Clubhouse, just search for Amazon Mastermind Advanced Strategies Techniques Mindset.
Yeah, it's Rana Singh.
Yeah, Rana Singh, RanaSingh.
I think Rana was actually in watching today too. He was commenting.
Oh, was he?
Was he?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
That's fine. But yeah, it is 1:17 here.
Okay.
So
I think that was the last question.
Man, this time flies when I'm with you guys, man.
I know.
Like 6 hours or something. We gotta have a how long does it take to get through two cigars? That's how long.
Yeah, that's right. Big 60 gauge cigars.
Yeah.
All right, so it is time. You haven't seen this, Kevin. This is brand new, but watch this.
Okay, here we go.
It's time for the Wheel of Health.
That, of course, is courtesy of my older brother, Hayden. He made the music, the graphics, and yeah. So thank you for that, Hayden. Shout out to him. So I think I've got everyone. This is for one of two duvets from Tony Segar. And here we go. Three, two, I'll give it a shuffle. Three, two, one.
Oleg. Very okay. Good.
Oleg is the first one. Give it another shuffle. Three, two, one. Okay, Matthew.
Matthew. All right. So we got our two winners. And what do they have to do to claim their giveaway?
All right. So they can email me at k@lunchwithnorm.com. But I'll also be reaching out on Messenger. So just check your messages. And you can always message me too. But k@lunchwithnorm.com. That's where you can email me. Just send over your betting size and your address so I can hook you up with Tony.
All right. And once again, thanks a lot, Tony, for donating those two prizes. That's awesome. I'm sure everybody's going to enjoy that. All right, Kevin. So I guess I'll be seeing you over in the clubhouse room in a few minutes. I'm going to go eat. I'm starved. It's lunch for Norm. Very soon.
Yeah, I'll see you over there.
And, all right. Thanks, Kevin.
Next month as well. We'll have to do this again.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'll send you over.
Looking forward to it.
Since you're the only guy I follow, you know, I gotta be here.
All right. You know. And right back at you.
All right.
So thank you, everybody, for joining us today. It was a great session. Hope you learned something. Kelsey, what is coming up?
Okay, we have Taylor Boone next weekend.
Yep.
Or on Monday. She's going to be going over product photography. She's an amazing photographer, recommended by Marsha. And yeah, we're going to dive into that. As well, we have a pretty big YouTube star coming on, Sumnar Hobart. He's coming on with his wife, and they're going to be talking about their experience living abroad and working with a husband-wife team as well. And yeah, so we got a pretty good lineup next week, and hope you guys tune in for that as well. Follow our Beer Nation. Just search Lunch with Norm, Amazon FBA, and E-Commerce Collective. In the Facebook group, and you'll find it. That's where all the good stuff is. I'm sure I'll be making a meme of the mythical Norm in the page soon, so look out for that. But yeah, thank you everyone for watching. You know, we got to get going, so really appreciate everyone's views. You guys are the best. We love the Beer Nation, and yeah.
Okay, so just remember to join us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, noon Eastern Standard Time. Thank you for joining us today. And thank you. We couldn't do this without you, without this community. We're growing this community every day. So, by the way, enjoy the rest of your day. We'll see you later. 100, 100, 100.